With all this thinking about crosstalk, we started to wonder what gets lost in translation here in the U.S. The first, the most glaring, and perhaps most important divide that came to mind was the divide between the political right and left. Social psychologist Jonathan Haidt told Steve Paulson why Democrats and Republicans seem to speak different languages.
My sense is that your analysis of the political divide has very personal roots. You say you were a solid liberal, at least until you really started looking into the underlying moral values of liberals and conservatives, which made you reevaluate your own core political beliefs. What happened?
Well, I guess you could say that a lot of my research has been driven by moralistic anger or even hate. I came to political consciousness during the Nixon and Ford years, spent my young adulthood hating Republicans, watching as the Democrats seemed to just blow it in election after election. In 2004, I actually turned to politics in part because I wanted to help the Democrats understand about conservative morality. And as I got deeper and deeper into it, I realized that they are actually right about many things, just as liberals are right about many things.
Well, you actually go further than that in your book. You say that Republicans understand moral psychology and Democrats don't.
Well, that's right. I think most Democrats, if they look back on the sorry state of the party over the last few decades, will shake their head in agreement with that. The Republicans have just done a much better job of making appeals to the gut, making appeals that resonate emotionally rather than cerebrally. And politics, like so much else in life, is not a matter of calculation. It's a lot more like religion.
You're saying that we actually develop our core beliefs not through rational deduction. We don't sort of work it out in our head and figure out what's right. Mostly, it's some gut reaction, and then later on, we justify it.
Well, that's right. You need some first principles. You need some pole star. And as much as we might want to think that we steer by our own moral compass, the findings in social psychology show that we are much more like lemmings than we are like mavericks able to do whatever they think right. We're not very good at reasoning to weigh up all the pros and cons and decide which policy will yield the best results overall.
So what does this have to do with politics then, and specifically the way conservatives as opposed to liberals approach politics?
Much of my research has been to map out what are the taste buds of the moral mind. We find that liberal cuisine tends to rest most heavily on care or care, harm, compassion, suffering, all those sorts of issues, with also a fair amount of fairness and liberty, where liberty is fighting against oppression. So there's a set of moral concerns, and then policies grow out of that. Conservatives have all of those moral taste buds. They're not quite as compassionate, not quite as bleeding heart, but they have some others that liberals don't use as much, especially group loyalty, respect for authority, and a sense of sanctity or purity.
So you're saying those moral messages stick more with conservative voters?
You can trigger quite a lot of anger on both sides. But one of the unique things about national politics, the president is the high priest of the nation. And my view is that the Republican Party and conservatives more generally are just constitutionally better suited to play that religious role. Democrats are more likely to treat it like a policy question, and that's not really what presidential politics is all about.
Well, if candidates should not appeal mainly to the policies that they are espousing, what should they appeal to?
Well, let's take the central issue of this election. We're in huge trouble in this country. We are so vastly overspent. We've got to cut a hell of a lot, and we've got to raise taxes, and we've got to do more cutting than raising. Now, the Republicans come along, and they say, well, we're going to do it all with tax cuts. And I think that's crazy. You can't. But Obama should be saying, we've all got to give here. We're in big trouble, and we've all got to give. This is what great leaders do. Winston Churchill didn't come in and say, I promise you that 98% of you won't have to suffer when we fight the Germans, but the other 2% are going to give blood, sweat, toil, and tears. And Obama has been saying, we're in big trouble here, and don't worry, everyone, I'm going to protect all of you, but we got to raise taxes on the rich. That is a divisive appeal. I wish he would say, we've all got to give, and that means the middle class too. Think of it as though there's a button buried deep in our heads, which is the, we're in big trouble, cooperate as long as everyone else is cooperating. That's the button that Obama isn't pushing. It's a button that Bush didn't push after 9/11. So it's a bipartisan failure to appeal to our better nature, I think.
So as you lay out these different mindsets, do you see yourself as a kind of cultural translator, showing people how they can talk to each other, how they can talk across the political divide?
Yes, that's exactly what I'm hoping that my book will do. We try to confirm whatever it is that we start off believing, and we're always able to do that. So the only way that you can think well is if you can have other people on the other side to disconfirm your pet theories. Our thinking, our good thinking, requires talking openly and listening to people on the other side. All these good ideas that you never even were exposed to because you're locked in your own sort of your own gated moral community.
And yet, it's so hard to talk across this divide. I mean, people are more polarized than ever. How do you break through?
Well, first, let's just note things were really, really bad in the 19th century. I mean, leading up to the Civil War and afterwards. There is precedent in our history, and we've gotten through it. The danger is that now, for the first time in our history, the parties are not coalitions. Parties used to always be coalitions of interest groups. Now, for the first time, we have a perfect psychological split. All the people with a liberal personality and liberal values that go with it are in one party. All the people with a more conservative personality or disposition, actually libertarian and conservative, those two dispositions, are in the other party. And that means that for the first time, the people in the other party really are different. They think differently from each other. They value different things. They're really different cultures. And that's dangerous because it makes it extra easy to demonize them.
Well, and it seems to me that the task here, I mean, if we really care about civil discourse and ultimately about a healthier political scene, is not just to beat the people we don't like, but to figure out how to talk with them and meaningfully.
That's right. And that's why I think the way to do this is to think about indirect methods. There are some efforts that try to bring people together over food. Food is one of these deep things. When you eat with people at the same table, it activates ancient circuits of trust. You're saying we are like family. So I suggest indirect methods focus on relationships first and then gradually introduce policy questions or other political questions. So rather than just coming at them saying, why do you believe X if you also believe Y? I mean, that's the standard form of political attack. Rather than that, if you go and you say, conservatives are really concerned about personal responsibility, you know, tell me about that. Do you see both parties as fostering that? And if you make that sort of opening, which shows that you're not attacking, you're trying to understand, you often are met with a reciprocal gesture in which, say, you know, your brother-in-law might say, yeah, you know, the Democrats, they've always been against personal responsibility. But then he might soften him and say, you know, on the other hand, the Republicans, you know, so the way they bail out the banks, they haven't been so good on it either. So you got to get reciprocity and acknowledgement working for you. Don't just recreate the normal form of political engagement, which is a fight.
Interested in new ideas when those ideas are expressed in well-selected words.
That's Steve Paulson talking with Jonathan Haidt. His book is called The Righteous Mind, Why Good People Are Divided by Politics and Religion. You can hear more of Haidt talking about legislative politics and voting against our own interests on our website, ttbook.org.